There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. This is Talking of Books with Isabel Abuhul and the rest of the team.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
Only on DubaiEye 103.8.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. We are at our last slot of the Arabic World Books. Today we are with me, Nawal and Natalie, and we are talking about the Arab World's reviews with Man. The first book we talked about was The Return, then The Bride of Amman, and now we're talking of The President's Gardens by Mohsen Al-Ramli. Mm-hmm. You know, I just have to say before we start, I would like to remind to give the quiz questions again.
Yeah.
Yeah, very quickly.
So the first question, which was linked to our first book, The Silk Roads by Peter Frankopan, is Peter studied history at Jesus College, which is one of the colleges that makes up Cambridge University. And our question for you is how many colleges in total make up Cambridge University? And our second question, which was linked to our young reviewer, The Hounds of Penhallow Hall by Holly Webb. And the question is that one of the main characters is a dog and his name is Rex. But we would like to know, what does Rex mean? What does that name mean?
Yeah.
We already had some correct answers.
We have many correct
answers. So get in if you want to win.
And the third quiz question was related to The Return by Hisham Mattar. And the question was, Hisham Mattar is a writer, but what did he study? He studied
something different at university that you wouldn't expect for a writer.
No, not at all. So, fine. Waiting for your answers on 4001. Please mention your names. Thank you. We're talking about now The President's Gardens. Mohsen Al-Ramli, who is an Iraqi writer living in Madrid.
Yep.
And he's been living there since 95, so I suppose he lived in Iraq before that.
Then, yeah.
And his job was, he translated the Don Quixote
from Spanish
to Arabic.
So he's
a translator. He translates classics, usually from Spanish to Arabic. Mm-hmm. His book, The President's Garden. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the book.
Well, I'd never heard of the book or of Mohsen Al-Ramli. I was in the bookshop and I came across this beautiful cover of a book. It is a wonderful illustration of gardens and with little grenades, which I thought, well, that was interesting. And then I read the book blurb behind and it was about Iraq. And I'm from Iraq and I have not found many novels about Iraq in English that go through a lot of the social lives of families and of people who have lived in Iraq throughout all the different wars there. So I was very excited to purchase this book and read it, and it hasn't disappointed. Like we said, Mohsen Al-Ramli, he lives in Spain. Mm. He's an Iraqi author, and he's very active on Twitter, so you guys should follow him. And what's interesting about this book to me is that its range is very, very wide. It's a thick book, and he writes about three men. From childhood, they're called Abdullah, Tariq, and Ibrahim. And they're from a very small village that's never named. Mm. And we learn, which is interesting for me because I don't really know much about village life in Iraq.
Yeah.
I haven't lived there ever. I just visited there when I was very young. And so reading these details about village life and how family units operated and how village life and how small villages and cities changed from when the book first begins until throughout the wars, and how the village becomes more modern with electricity coming in and how the lives of these men change. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that despite the fact that these men all live in this village, we see how their lives take different routes as they grow up, and the fact that they, even though they're from a very small community, they all have different statuses. So one of the characters, Tariq, ends up becoming an imam. He becomes very religious and very intellectual, whereas Abdullah comes from a questionable background. No one's really sure who his parents are. He's adopted by a barren couple in the village. And then the main, I'd say, character, Ibrahim, who is very kind and wise, and he's kind of the glue between these three friends. And it's really interesting for me to see, as an Iraqi and as a reader who maybe doesn't know much about Iraq, to see how these great political issues and the details of war affect these three guys who are just friends and who just want to live a normal life and have a family in this in this village.
Mm. Yeah. And this happened, I think, in many, many countries.
Many, many countries,
I mean, I come from Algeria, lived in Algeria, and we had, you know, plenty of turmoils. And you can tell during the turmoils how all families get completely dispatched. Mm-hmm. Each one takes a direction, and you know, within the family, the situation changes completely. Mm. So I suppose it's everywhere, and it's interesting that it is through the characters that
exactly.
he showed those diversions and the impact of the different wars and the different problems that Iraq went through.
And it's a great reminder for me, I think, as an Iraqi, and I think for anyone who doesn't know much about Iraq, is that the diversity of
yes.
Iraqi people. I mean, within the story, we meet, you know, Iraqi Christians mm-hmm. and Iraqis from different faiths yeah. and different backgrounds and the different struggles they have with each other. For example, Ibrahim, who I said is like the protagonist, his daughter is not interested in village life. She wants to go to Baghdad and live in the city and forget about that side mm-hmm. of her life. And there's this struggle, this constant issue between, the relationship between, she's his only daughter, his only child.
Yeah.
And the fact that he discovers that he's, after having his daughter and going to war, he becomes, I'm not sure what the correct term is for a man who can't have kids anymore. He
I have no clue.
No, I don't think it's barren. Like,
it's not barren,
but it's yeah,
something
it,
happens
yeah.
because mm. of because of the war and that he can't have any more kids. So he's invested completely in this girl, and he refuses to treat her as just a girl, quote unquote.
Mm. Actually, he called her Qisma, which is fate.
Exactly, which is fate, and he's called Abu Qisma, so father of fate, which I think was a really interesting choice of names.
Mm.
And their relationship, and in fact, it's not a relationship that's, you know, just about. I think anyone can relate to that father daughter issue and the struggles that they have. I really loved that, and I liked reading these small details about Iraq that I had no knowledge of, just like I said before, village life and compared to city life, and these details of war from a social perspective or from the perspective of a character that we have no knowledge or idea of, because all we do is we read the news, or if you Google stuff like that, you get facts mm-hmm. about the war. You don't get the personal experience. And I think from this point on, I'm hoping there's going to be more novels and more stories that detail the social life, because those are the things I think that are...
That you can see through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that you learn more about
absolutely.
The human condition and the will of human survival through those things.
True. President's Gardens, the title.
Yeah.
You know, it's... Why is the title President's Gardens?
Well, I think because... there is this very strong connection to nature for these men in the village. They work on the farm. They're dedicated to the farm. It's their livelihood. Mm. It's how they make their money. It's how they their status is organized as well. And you see that, for example, one of the characters, Abdullah, who was imprisoned in Iran for a very long time, Ibrahim and Tariq take care of his farm and his garden for a long time. And I think we discussed this a little bit when we were talking about Hisham Matar's book, The Return. Abdullah was gone for 20 years from his village. When he returns, we read his perspective on looking at the landscape, looking at the well that he used to go to with his adopted father, and looking at the fields and how he remembers them differently in his mind, and returning, and this point of nature being this constant theme or weave throughout the novel.
There was also some mention, something mentioning his work at the palace, and he worked, actually he was hired to work in the president's gardens, and there is it's an image which is quite particular. I lived in Iraq, so and I lived at the times of Saddam Hussein, so the image is quite interesting, because he talks about the paradisal gardens in which he was working, where, if you might have heard, even the fountain water was with perfume. doomed.
Yeah.
And, you know, the camels were, you know, where the camels gaze, there are a lot of roses around. And there were also crocodiles swimming in the pools. So, and naturally, underneath those gardens, there were completely other things happening. And it was the place where horrors were going on beneath the gardens.
Yeah.
So I suppose the novel has been taken, you know, the title has been taken on purpose to see this two contradictory...
Yeah, this juxtaposition between this, these beautiful things
exactly,
like
that you
nature,
see,
that you see
and what you don't see and how the, you know, things. And this is, because I was saying, why is it the president's gardens? I mean, we're talking about three different characters and... well, I find it a very moving investigation from, and it goes back to what we said earlier about Hisham Attar. Hisham Attar was looking for a father that he didn't see and for a country that he didn't know. And I think, you know, somebody like the Iraqi Mohsen, Mohsen al-Ramli, who left his country and he has seen things, you know, evolving in different ways. And I think it's a big investigation and a big novel talking about injustice and, you know, the importance of the dignity. There is a lot talking about dignity and friendship. In the middle of the oppression. So,
and I think what you mentioned just now about the title and the fact that there's these beautiful gardens and what's happening underneath, it's a theme actually throughout the story in terms of how the Iraqi regime operated or how Iraq is seen now, how we as people who don't live there, we hear stuff about Iraq, you know, this country that was very beautiful or specific things about what's happening there now, but we don't actually have an awareness of what's happening under the surface. I think it's a really a great theme that runs throughout.
Have you talked about this book on your YouTube page?
No, not yet.
On YouTube channel, rather.
Not YouTube channel.
No,
so,
you
I
talked
haven't.
About the
Fadiz
Ahmad.
So tell us, what is the name of your YouTube channel?
It's Man of the Hour. I did a play on pun. My name, Man, M-A-A-N.
Man of the Hour. Man,
so Google that or go on YouTube and you can see me talk about these books and more and stuff like that. Yeah.
Great. I think we're reaching the end of our Arab World reviews. And thank you, Man, for being with us today. And
you're
I
welcome.
Hope to see you again. Bring us more.
Yes, definitely. I'll bring you a whole bunch of books.
Oh, that would be great. Well, we have our break soon. I'll see you after the break. For our lead reviewer, with our lead reviewer Prachiti, who is going to talk about The Novel Cure and The Story Cure by Ella Bertrude and Susan Alderkin. See you in a while.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back on Talking of Books. Nawal, me again, is hosting today with Natalie. We're happy to have Prachiti with us today. Welcome.
Thank you, Nawal.
Prachiti,
hi,
nice
Natalie.
To see you
how
again.
Are you doing?
Hope you had a nice holiday.
Oh, yes, I did. I've been to India and it was a monsoon there, so I had a nice holiday there.
Fabulous. Lucky you. Well, Prachiti, what did you bring us today? The Novel Cure and the Story Cure.
Yes, I bring you Novel Cure and the Story Cure. But before that, I want you to introduce to you a new term which I come across in this book, which is bibliotherapy.
Yeah.
And have you heard about it?
No, never before seeing the books.
Yeah, this is my first time. I think it's perfect. I feel like I can't wait to fit it into a sentence and impress people.
Exactly. And I think we went already through this therapy, didn't we, Natalie?
Because books are therapy,
books are
aren't
therapy.
They? You can escape, you can learn, they are therapy.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is what these two ladies, Ella and Susan, have done, that they came together. They were referring books to each other when they were in the college.
Yeah.
And they were students of English literature. And that time they were referring books to each other. And later on, Ella does her becomes an art teacher and Suzanne becomes a novelist and the journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2008, they started this bibliotherapy service, which is it's just like exactly prescribing medicines with the ailment. So The Novel Cure is their first book, and The Story Cure is their second one. The Novel Cure is for the adults, and Story
that
Cure...
That was the first book written, yeah.
And The Story Cure is for children, mm-hmm. and they came up with different ailments, and they referred books regarding that. And when you go through the book, to be honest, I'm a little biased with The Story Cure because that has got beautiful, it has a beautiful
cover.
The Story
Cure, let me precise, The Story Cure, it is not supposed to be for children, but for young adults.
Well, actually,
But if you go through The Story Cure, in the very beginning, they have mentioned that it's like they have prescribed books for 6 and under, and then 5 to 8 or the beginners, and then 8 to 12 and 12 plus. So,
but in their introduction, they say this book is for grown-ups in the exciting position of choosing books for children. Mm. Parents, carers, grandparents, friends, teachers, librarians, or distant aunts wishing to send a cuddle or a cautionary tale from a distance. So they want you to use this as an adult, as a parent. And if your child's going through something or your student, you can look through, find the thing, and then get the appropriate book to help them.
But if I see two books, I'm pretty much in favor of The Story Cure because obviously it has got an interesting cover, and
the
illustrations inside are fantastic. Like some of them are really like some of them have got enough space even if you wish to scribble in the book and wish to color some of the illustrations. So
can I ask a question? Let me talk about first The Novel Cure, if you don't mind.
Yes, sure.
Because it was first, it came first, and then this is how the idea came for the children. It says that if you are weary in brain and body, you desire a positive cure for your pessimism, or do you require Bronte to reboot your broken heart, or do you despair of your nose? Or can Fielding open your flawed gates, blah, 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 you know? So, or if you want to cure your loneliness, well, I would say I would pick up any book and read it.
Yeah.
And it's very personal. So if, it's called The Novel Cure, and it is called a medical handbook. If you go on their website, they present it as a medical handbook with a difference. I like this. So this book is to be read like you pick up the book and you read it all?
Sorry to cut you off in between, Nawal, but I'm so much excited about the book.
Tell us about it.
It's like, I'm feeling like not doing anything today. Okay, let me see which books I can read so that I can again be on track. Yeah. So this is kind of like a referral book.
Okay.
And they have given enough lists in the book, and so that you can pick up a book and you read. And I have, as you can see, I have entire book with the post-it. So
I can tell.
It's
have
just,
you tried it for Chitty?
I realized there's so much to read.
Yeah,
it's just like going through the entire books, and there's so much to read. Like the book is set up in a fashion where they starts with the A to Z about the elements, and they index the elements, and at the end it's the index of all the list of all the elements. Then there is a list of authors and their novels and everything. So it's just like opening a dictionary, going through like word by word. And
great. Do you mind just picking up one and telling us how to cure it through this book?
Oh, yes. As I'm talking to you, I've just opened a page which says that not knowing what novels to take on the holiday.
Ha, that's a good thing.
They basically say that don't make like a mistake of choosing your books or expecting that you'll find a book which you like to read in the bookshop at the airport. It's not necessarily going to happen, and then you're going to land up reading something which you are not really looking forward to. So they say that you prepare your list beforehand, and they have also given the 10 best novels to read in a hammock. So I'll read just one or two of them. One is the Victoria's History of the Island. Then they have given Snowflower and the Secret Fan of Lisa Lee. And they have Jack Mags by Peter Carey. So it's an entire list of 10 books which you can sit in a hammock and read. And which is, I think, it's interesting. It's interesting that you know, sometimes I agree that it's a question which novels to take on the holiday. Not necessarily, will it suit my mood there, will it not? If I'm going on a beach holiday, maybe I'll like to read something which is like the novels to read in hammock. Okay, like people like us who like to read all the time, doesn't matter which book are you reading, but sometimes it acts as a good kind of a guideline.
And it's nice to have a collection somewhere, because quite often I'll see on my Facebook page or something like that, friends saying, oh, just finished the best book, has anyone got any suggestions?
Yes.
And then you all write your favorite books, and it's nice that they're all here. And as I was reading this in preparation for the show, I actually did start reading it from the beginning to the end, because I just and I started putting post-its in and highlighting, because it's you just want to read all of these books. I was thinking something was interesting is, obviously, we've just had the A-level results last week and the GCSE results this week.
Yeah.
And there's lots of sections for young people as well. For example, there's a section that says the 10 best novels to read on your gap year. And it says these books will define your life. You'll always have something to talk about with one of these in your backpack. And there's lots of different things there, like Flowers for Algernon by Daniel Keyes, which I've read, Lucy by Jamaica Kincaid. So it's ranging from young adult to you know, any age.
Yeah.
There's something in here for everyone. And sorry, just one more thing that I thought was really great is they don't discriminate between seriousness of the ailment. There's books in here for bereavement and depression or all of these really quite serious things. Mm. But there's books in here for breaking a nail, and and there's a book for if you don't like DIY, and there's a what to do if your lipstick smudges. Like, there's all these kind of really sort of light-hearted reads as well, which is fantastic.
Yeah, there are certain books which are like there is a section on homesickness, which probably is like, you know, when you move to a new country, you obviously gonna feel homesick. So they have suggested books which you can read. And the best part I like about it is it's not only that they recommend the books, but at some time they have given a little bit about the book, so you know what that book contains.
Okay.
Which is good, I think, that rather than you go and look for the book and then you see that, oh, I don't like the book.
No.
So it's better that you have got kind of a gist of the book here in front
make
of you.
That clear that it's not just lists of
yes.
books. There's whole kind of 2-3 pages dedicated to each thing with a small almost blurb of that book and why it would be relevant to that ailment.
Yeah,
which
it's
is
fantastic,
yeah.
Like the Hemingway for the headache.
Yeah, yeah, fantastic. Yeah, there's a whole section about extravagance, and I think living in Dubai, that's one that we should all perhaps look at. And it says extravagance is in spending money on things you can't afford and don't really need.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of books to help you get over that addiction.
There is another section which says being in a jam. I think we every day get stuck in a traffic jam, and they suggest can you guess which book they are recommending? It's a very well-known book, and the movie has been out about it. It's by Jan Markel, Life of Pi.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
True.
We're coming up to time where we need to take another break.
Yes, and meanwhile, we'll prepare the next week's
quiz. The next question, yes, exactly. So join us back here in just a moment.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading. From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. We are here with myself, Nawal, and Natalie, hosting and co-hosting the show today. We've been together since 10 a.m., Natalie. It has been great.
It's flown by, yes.
And Prachiti joined us earlier talking about these new remedy books, which are The Novel Cure and The Story Cure, put together by these two fantastic ladies. We were saying that they must have read tons of books before suggesting this cure. We have our quiz question for this slot. Natalie, would you like to announce the quiz question, please?
Yes, and then we should do a roundup maybe of the other questions. Yeah, so the question for this section is the two authors of these great books, Ella Berthoud and Susan Elderkin, I hope I've said that correctly, have come up with this term for what it feels like when you find... I don't want to say the words in case I say the name.
A cure
through reading books. Yes, so that's exactly it. So what it feels like when you find a cure through reading the right type of book at the right moment in your life. And they've coined a term. So we'd like you to message in on 4001 with the answer. What is the term for when you find a cure through reading a book?
Yes.
And remember to put your name. And then our a quick roundup of our other quiz questions. It might be the last time we get a chance to mention them. Is for our first book, which was The Silk Roads by Peter Frankopan. Peter studied history at Jesus College, which is one of the colleges that make up Cambridge University. And our question for you is, how many colleges in total make up the university? How many are there in total? And the question linked to the young reviewer section is the book The Hound of Penhallow. And this hound was called Rex in the book. And we would like to know, what does Rex mean? Yeah. And then the Arab world question.
The Arab world question was regarding Hisham Matar. He is our Libyan-American writer who wrote Return. And what did he study? He is a writer, but he studied another matter at the university. What is it? For this SMS 4001 with your names, please, so that we can reach you easily. Prachiti, back to you and to the novel cure. So we were saying, I mean, these two ladies are amazing because they have put together a huge amount of names of books that they must have read, because how can they tell you? It's like, it reminds me of a book that doctors use for medicine. It's called, I don't know if it's called like this in English, but in French it's called the Vidal, V-I-D-A-L, where you open the book and you have all the names of medicine, and then you see what is it for. And how, the, you know, all the, what is it made for? So it's exactly the same, because if I look at the pages where instead of the name of the medicine, you have a name of a book. To read.
Exactly.
So I think the...
This concept is, I have never come across basically this term, what they invented, and I have never come across this kind of books. Even when Chrissy suggested me these books, she first gave me The Novel Cure, and I was like, the cover looks boring. I'm not sure whether the book is interesting. Hmm. I mean, yes, I did a mistake of judging a book by its cover.
Yeah, sometimes and we do.
And then Chrissy said, if you are going to do The Novel Cure, you should probably read The Story Cure as well. And it's fantastic. Like, some of the elements we don't even think about, like that it's an element. And I'll go through one which is probably for all the book lovers there, and which is being a compulsive book buyer. And I think that probably the element which we all have, those who are the book lovers, they probably like, ah, someone recommended that book. Maybe I'll read it later. Yeah. Oh, I'm getting that book on the discount. I should buy it now. And they say that maybe what you should do is probably you can get the e-copy, see through it, how the book is. Are you really enjoying the story? Is it of your liking? Or is it the book which you would like to on your have on your bookshelf?
Yeah.
And then go and buy the book. So you will not end up with having n number of books. But yeah, and sometimes the book, if they have good illustration, then you need to have them on your bookshelf rather than just reading it on an e-reader. But if I talk about myself and how I buy books, I probably not go to the e-reader and buy the book because I don't find it interesting. Maybe I'll not like the e-reader version, but I'll enjoy the physically reading and flipping through pages, which is...
Well, I use the e-reader version, the sample, when I hear about a book. I have no clue about the writer, I have no clue about the book, so I just have an idea of the style. and I do the sample. It saves sometimes time for me and, you know, energy to go to the bookshelf.
This type of book definitely needs to be in physical copy, though, doesn't it? Because the thing with an e-reader, it's hard to flick from one area to the other. You kind of have to just go through page by page. And this is the exact kind of book where you don't start at the beginning and finish at the end. You flip through and find the ailment, you know.
And it's not only that. Even at the end of each ailment, they have recommended that you should also see these other ailments, like, similar to that, and you can find some other books to read, so which is quite good. And I don't think that the e-reader can do justice to this kind of book.
But what about the Story Cure, which is supposed to be for kids? Is it the same way of using it, like you feel ailment and then you go to the book the same way like adults
it's the same way, but it's I'll say that it's not that for kids to go and refer to. It's again for the parents and aunts and aunties and everyone who wants to give a gift to their kids. And they have they in this particularly Story Cure, they have assigned symbols behind the book name saying that it is suitable for which age group.
Okay.
Which makes your life easier, so you know that what age group you are giving a book as a gift to.
Okay.
And the best thing about this, the Story Cure, is it has got nice illustrations in between. And if I go through some of the things which you probably are like, it talks about being a new kid at the school, which book you should give for your kids to read when they go. I mean, in Dubai, it's very common because it's a moving place. People come in and leave, and kids always find it difficult to adjust in a new school. As well as, at some point, what they have done is they have also given the cure for the same ailment for grown-ups.
I think we need that.
Yeah.
If the kids are having problems coping with school, the new school, I think parents also have to be helped, you know, to help them cope with the school.
They have given, actually, not for the moving with the school, but they have given a cure for starting school.
Okay.
Which probably parents are now going to be stressed with. And they have recommended a cure for grown-ups. The book is If I Could Keep You Little by Marion Richmond.
Okay.
And the good thing about this one out of the two books, this one I found really, it's as if they'd gone into a child's mind and thought what's going to be really important to them. So there's things that maybe as an adult you might just dismiss quickly. For example, there's a couple of books recommended for if your goldfish dies. There's books recommended for personal hygiene, being a chatterbox, wanting to be a princess, not liking having to kiss granny. but then there's also finding it hard to make friends or parents
and losing your favorite first toy and all that.
And it's things that I think sometimes as adults and maybe even as a teacher myself, you kind of think, oh, don't worry about that. Come on, move on, because in our concept, it's such a small thing, and we know it's not going to be. But to that child, it's the biggest thing in their world.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important that to be able to hand a book and say, this will understand you. This book knows how you feel.
Like, even they have a book on non-appearance of the tooth fairy.
Really?
And having a wobbly tooth.
Yes.
So that's fantastic. And even they have, like, what is being like a twin? So what book you should give your kids to read, and what it's like being a twin, or even they have something on the social media, like Hooked on the Social Media.
This would be a good book to give to a new parent, because they can use it throughout their child's entire life. It's right from the beginning of losing a tooth right up to puberty and school. And I can already, as soon as I saw these in my head, I have a whole list of people who are getting this for Christmas.
I mean, it reminds me of something very funny. While you were talking about these books that give you these kinds of recipes, when I was, there are these books while pregnant, you buy them and you read what's going to happen and your child when he's a newborn. It used to be called, in French, I was reading it in French, it was by Laurence Pernod, who is a psychologist, doctor, whatever. And I was reading every step of everything that was happening and trying also to be prepared for the next step. The funny thing is that when I used to go to the doctor and he would prescribe something, I would say, I'm sure I was really saying something wrong to the doctor. Say, oh, but Laurence Pernod said, if this happens, it should, you know. So the trap of following these, you know, of following books, you know, like you pick them up and you start following them step by step. Sometimes it is quite dangerous.
Absolutely.
And the second thing, listening to what is the books that are here prescribed, I would say, it reminds me, I'm sure this is nothing new than what used to be done by our grandmothers and mothers. I always go back to my grandmother, who had a big impact on my life, and saying that the grandmother, I remember, they never used to give us recipes or give us advice bluntly. They would invent a story. Like when I was little, there was this story time before going to bed, because my grandmother was not reading books, but she was telling me stories. And whatever has happened as a big issue during the day, like a fight with a friend, or like whatever would happen, or I was punished for something I have done wrong, or she would go around that question telling me a story about somebody else and turning it into a princess who was doing this and that, and then giving me the answer to my, you know, the big question of the, what have I done wrong and why am I punished? Or, and I found this way a superb way of getting over, you know, what has happened to you during the day.
Absolutely.
So this prescription of book, yes, now, and how many times as adults have we picked up a book and we read it three times in different times of our life.
And it means something totally
different. And it means something totally different, because at that certain time of our life, we needed to read that book that would enlighten us to a situation that we couldn't find any
answer. And that's exactly why the titles even are perfect. Like, the books really can be a cure. And that brings us back to our quiz question for this section. And the quiz question is, the writers, Ella and Susan, have come up with a term for what it means when a book provides a cure to something, so a way that you are feeling. And what is that term that they have come up with? So if you know the answer, it's 4001.
We already have many.
Have we? And remember to give your name.
Good answers.
And I think Ellen is saying that we are we need to come back again in a few minutes.
Fine, then time for our little break, and stay with us.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading. From Agatha Christie to Jeffrey Archer, we've got it covered. Talking of books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. Noel here with you, hosting the session today, together with Natalie, co-hosting. And we are unfortunately out at our last 10 minutes of the show that has gone by so quickly. Prachiti is here with us talking about the story cure and the novel cure. Well, these two fantastic ladies who have decided to give us cure books. I wouldn't say the word because it's the quiz.
Yes.
Cure books, how to treat our ailments and our kids' ailments in a different way. So instead of medicine and...
Exactly. You know. And these two books, if you must be thinking that, oh, so it's an ailment, but the difference is, you know, you will not find the same ailment in both the books. The one which is there in the novel cure is entirely different than the one in the story cure, which is I tried looking for the same in both, but no, they are dealing it totally differently. And I would also like to kind of say to parents who are going to buy the story book, the story cure, that please read the guidelines which they have given for the age group and the books, so that it depends again on what culture and what family background you're coming from, but that guideline will help if you're going to give a book as a gift to somebody else.
Okay.
They have given the age groups, and they have given what the code will be in the entire book for that particular age group. which is, I think, is it's quite good.
So it's different age groups in the same book.
Yes.
All right.
And each, yeah, they lay it out so that each ailment, it will say, for example, starting a new school, and then there may be two or three books, and it will say, this book is a picture book, and so it's for age 3 to 5, or this book is a young reader, a young adult book. And,
okay.
And that's really good, because you don't want to accidentally send your 15-year-old niece a picture book, and vice versa.
Yes, so, true. It's good to have an idea.
That's actually, I mean, and this guideline they have only given in the story Cure, which is not there in the novel Cure. So
because
which
it was for adults.
Yes. So this makes it easy to choose even books.
Yeah.
Even randomly, if you want to send somebody a book as a gift, you know that which books you can send them. And I was just going through this book, and there was an entire section on obsession, and I came across a list of different books, and it's around four or five pages, which has got 10 books about ballet, about dinosaurs, about dogs, fairies, even about, you know, martial arts, being in the space, and it's a fantastic book. And I was just going through about the space, and I realized that I read one book long time back, which is 172 Hours on the Moon, and I really loved the book. And it's mentioned in there. So I was like, oh, yes, I at least read one of the entire list. So, and it is otherwise also giving, if otherwise, forget about the ailment, but you are thinking that what you should read, this is the entire, I'll say that, world open in front of you of all the fictional books. And they're not anywhere prescribing self-help or non-fictional books.
No, I agree.
It is entirely pure, it is purely fiction. So, it's for everybody and anybody. Rather, and I appreciate that they are not, they haven't included any self-help books on that particular ailment, which would have made it like sound like, oh, you are really sick.
Yeah, I agree. No, and then it's nice to have this list of books anyway, be there or not, you know, the ailment or the problem or the situation.
Yeah.
It gives you, it's like a list of books, you know, to give your kids
it's
to
your
read.
Own personal librarian.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, you would walk into the library and say, oh, do you have a book on da 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 da? And they say, oh, yes. Well, now you just have this. You have your librarian on your shelf. You can, anything you want to think of, you can, there's something in there.
I agree. Yeah.
Shall we announce our...
I think it's time to
it's
announce.
It's time to announce the winners of our quiz questions, who are very lucky because they will be receiving books, I believe, and we'll be in touch after the show to work out how to get the books to you. So... our first question was about Peter Frankopan, who wrote our first book, The Silk Road. And the question was, how many colleges in total are there in Cambridge University? And Peter went to Jesus College, which was one of them. And the correct answer is 31 colleges. And the winner is Jerim Dansell. So Jerim will be in touch after the show.
Congratulations.
The next question was from our young reviewer section. And one of the main characters in the book is a dog called Rex. And we asked, what is the meaning of the name Rex? And the meaning is king. And Ishal is our winner for that particular section. Congratulations, Ishal.
Congratulations.
Our final one was, what did the author of one of our Arab World books study? The author was Hisham Mattar.
Yes.
Correct? Did
yes.
I say that? Yes.
Excellent.
What did he study at university? So he's a writer. You would expect it to be English literature or something like that.
Mm.
And it was actually architecture.
Yes.
Which was really interesting. And Mann actually said, didn't he, that you can see
you
that
can
in
see
the books.
Through the, when he goes back to Libya and he starts talking, you know, describing the buildings around, you can tell it's from an eye of an architect.
That's so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the winner of that is Keith. So thank you for messaging in, Keith. We got your messages. Thank you for all of them. It's fabulous. We're so glad you've won that question. And finally, based on the books we're just talking about, is what is the term the authors created about the use of books as therapy in the treatment of mental or psychological disorders or anything else, whether you've broken a nail or anything? And that term is bibliotherapy, and biblio meaning books and the act of reading books, so bibliotherapy. And the winner of that was Mohammed. So keep your phones on. We will be calling you later to work out how to get these books to you. Thank you for entering and being involved in the show.
Yeah, that was very good, having such good answers and such so many.
I love bibliotherapy messages. As a term.
Me too, and this is a term that is definitely going to be used, at least in my household.
Yeah, well, it's in the dictionary now. Yeah. So I looked it up. I thought they had... You know, just, but it's actually, whether it's been in the dictionary because of them, but it's in, and it said bibliotherapy is an expressive therapy that involves the reading of specific texts with the purpose of healing.
Absolutely. And anyway, wonderful. Whatever the text is, personally, it heals
yes.
me.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think even though all the readers who don't know this term, they were giving themselves a bibliotherapy throughout their life.
Yeah. We're bibliotherapists.
Yes. We are. Yeah.
We should add it to our CV.
I'm
going to change that when I get home. Bibliotherapist.
I think we went through the bibliotherapy, all of us.
Yes.
All the book readers have been under the bibliotherapy.
And book readers should not be felt left out, because this book also handles about, like, you know, being a compulsive reader and being an obsessive. I mean, you have a they say that it's an ailment that you feel like
can't
want to buy a book. Yeah. You want to buy a book just because, okay, I'll read it sometime.
Yeah, well, let's not put aside the ones who don't read too much. And
They have cure for them as well.
Yes, I think I would like to invite people who don't find the time to read, let's put it this way, to grab a book and go through this therapy, because I think it's a very, very helpful one. We are going to end our session soon. Prachiti, if you have to put this book in a complicated question. If you have to put this book on a shelf on any library, would you put it at schools? Would you put it with the children? Would you put it with the high school, with big ones, or at university? I'm talking about The Story Cure.
The Story Cure, I'll put it with the school librarians, definitely. And even some schools have counselors, so I'll suggest them that maybe this book can help, because it's a therapy by the end of the day. It's a bibliotherapy.
Yeah.
Telling children about that ailment in a story form.
Yeah, maybe so with teachers.
With the teachers as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to keep this on my desk at school, because so often, particularly in the pastoral side of school, my tutor group, or they'll come in and tell me, oh, this is happening, that's happening. And I'm going to refer to this.
You know, with kids, the thing is, when you tell them a story, they like it more and they listen to it more than you're just giving them a plain,
like,
blunt advice.
Mm-hmm. Or like
so
a mother, yeah.
Even this is highly recommended for all parents who are thinking that, oh, how should I, if you don't have the ability to develop a story like your grandmother had, but they can recommend a book to their kids, or they can just give a book just casually to their kids that, yes, I think you should read it.
Yeah. This happens mainly with teenagers.
Yes,
you know, the communication gets a little bit less open and less, a bit more
just
complicated.
Leave a book on their bookshelf.
So, I think the best way to help that is, and then discuss the book together. Well, we unfortunately came to the end of this beautiful show. We would like to thank all our listeners for having tuned with us, and we would like to thank Natalie for having to bear me for these 3 hours. Thank you for Prachiti and all our guests who have been with us today. It was absolutely a pleasure and a delicacy to be with them.
Absolutely.
And we will see you next. We will tune with us 103.8 Dubai for our next show, which will be next Saturday, talking about another series of books and having fantastic guests as usual. Thank you Aline, for your patience and for always being with us. Have a very good day.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading.
This is Talking of Books here on Dubai Eye 103.8.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.